Hi there, I'm Dr. Dustin Kostescu, and I'm an associate professor of obstetrics and gynecology at McMaster University, where I practice as a family planning and sexual health specialist. A group of us got together and virtually attended the European Society of Gynecology meeting between November 10th and November 13th. Unfortunately, we didn't get to go to Venice proper, but what we wanted to do was provide a rapid review of some of the more important abstracts and presentations we saw there, because we think that there's some implications for your clinical practice. It's my pleasure to introduce Dr. Ali Shore, who is going to tell us a little bit about herself and then tell us about one of the presentations that she saw.
So I'm Ali Shore. I'm an OBGYN at St. Michael's Hospital in Toronto, and I'm an assistant professor at the University of Toronto. So my presentation is going to be talking about COVID-19 and menstruation, which I find really fascinating. And I am one of the co-founders of the Pandemic Pregnancy Guide, where we review up-to-date information on COVID and using social media. So that's why I really wanted to review this topic today. The roundtable I attended was on COVID-19 and menstruation by Dr. Jacqueline Maben. So it brings us to think about, why should we study COVID-19 and menstruation? Why is it important? So if we think about it, 50% of the world's population either is menstruating, will menstruate, or has menstruated. And about a third of those women will experience some sort of menstrual irregularity during their reproductive life. As well, a lot of women see their fertility a lot of women see menstruation as an outward reflection of their fertility. And some scientists believe we should actually be using menstruation as one of our vital signs, because it can actually reflect if someone is healthy or not. So if we look at COVID-19 and what's out there, there has been an explosion in the scientific literature. There is over 200,000 papers that have been published about COVID-19 during the pandemic. But if you look at how COVID relates to menstruation, there have actually only been 12 papers. And this really reflects maybe how important or not important the scientific community views women's health in general. So Dr. Maben broke it up into three big categories. So the first category we're going to talk about is the influence of the pandemic on menstruation itself. So this doesn't have to do with COVID infection or vaccination, but really what was happening with women's periods during the pandemic, during lockdown, things like that. So there were 9 studies in the literature, and they looked at things like cycle length, cycle regularity, amount and duration of bleeding, were women experiencing any pain? And as you can see here, there was a huge variation in what the studies were showing. Now, the studies were small. They were from anywhere from 50 to 1,000 people. And for the most part, they were retrospective online surveys. So asking women to recall what their periods were like during that time. And we all know that these studies can have lots of bias in terms of reporting bias, as well as selection bias. And the other thing was, in a lot of these studies, they didn't talk about whether or not people were using hormones, or they didn't review any sort of standardized terminology like international standards like the FIGO classification. So as a result, there was a lot of lack of consistency, and we can't really draw any conclusions, which makes it hard in terms of telling our patients what to expect. The next group of studies she reviewed were actually about COVID infection and menstruation. So the first two reviewed acute infection, and then the last one there reviewed long COVID. And as we can see here, COVID infection seem to have an effect on many aspects of a patient's cycle. And that's really not surprising if we think about the effects of any severe infection on menstruation, whether it's an acute infection or a chronic disease. We know that menses is affected by infections and these high stress states. So we can tell our patients that yes, there probably are changes related to COVID infection on your periods. But again, these studies were not particularly large. There was reporting bias. They didn't use standardized terminology, and there were confounders like hormone use. So if people are on hormones to regulate their cycles, they may not see those effects of the infection in the same way some person who wasn't on any hormones would see them. And then the last group of studies that we learned about was unpublished data related to the COVID vaccine and menstruation. So there are two surveys that took place that haven't been published yet. The first was an American survey of over 17,000 premenopausal double vaccinated individuals. And this survey took place over social media from April to June of 2021. And they found that about 30% of women had some sort of menstrual irregularity, either related to the first or the second dose of the vaccine. And a lot of women, 70% in fact, experienced breakthrough bleeding when they were using LARCs. The study was great in terms of it described the methods well and assessed the volume and duration of menstruation, but the downsides were that there was a huge selection bias because it took place on social media. And if you recall at that time, there were tons of reports on social media about changes with periods in after the vaccine. So it probably selected out a lot of women who were already aware of those types of changes. And they didn't really account for any sort of birth control usage. The next study was a UK retrospective study about 5,000 women. They actually used women who had COVID and who hadn't had COVID, but all of them who had been vaccinated. And they found that more women had a menstrual disturbance if they'd actually had a COVID-19 infection. And this may have something to do with the fact that we know that people who get vaccinated after having COVID can sometimes have a worse response or one of those more significant immune responses to the COVID vaccine. And they found that there were less menstrual disturbances in women who were on the birth control pill. So this study was well described and there was less selection bias, but again, they didn't use any of those standardized terminology like the FIGO classification. So this really takes us to thinking critically about how we are studying menstruation, which is clearly something that happens to lots of women worldwide and needs to be a focus. The studies that they did run, first of all, there were few as we saw, but then second of all, there was a lot of reporting bias and selection bias based on the methodology or how the studies were designed. There was a lack of using standardized terminology, which makes it difficult to compare papers between each other. And then they didn't really take into account confounders like hormones, whether or not a patient had had an infection, whether they were being treated for COVID with steroids or anything like that. And all this goes to show how this was like a really big missed learning opportunity. And we need to make sure that women's health physicians and gynecologists are really at the table when we're designing these big studies to look at new infections and new vaccines. Now, if we think about it for a few minutes, when we think about how the you know, what the mechanisms would be for menstrual disturbance related to either COVID-19 infection or the vaccine itself, we can break it down into the three big categories of where menstruation is happening or how menstruation happens in the body. So from a hypothalamic and pituitary level, we know that stress and chronic illness can affect periods. So it's easy to kind of make that leap to think that, okay, a very severe acute COVID infection or long COVID could affect periods in that way. When we think about it on an ovarian level, it's possible that infection could affect the production of estrogen and progesterone, which then could lead to ovulatory dysfunction. And lastly, when we think about it on the endometrial level, we know that when progesterone is withdrawn at the end of a cycle, there's inflammation there. And so if COVID-19 infection or vaccination causes more infection, that could certainly create some menstrual irregularities. As well, if you're very sick from COVID, you might have hypoxia, which can lead to disturbance in vasoconstriction at an endometrial level. We've heard a lot about endothelial cell dysfunction related to COVID and the blood clots that can happen. So that could affect coagulation again at the endometrial level. Or there could be medications like dexamethasone, which are given in to treat COVID, and that can affect a woman's periods. So right now they're actually doing a study in Edinburgh where they're looking at long COVID and the effects on menstruation. And they're taking any woman who's still menstruating with long COVID, and they're seeing her at 3 points in her cycle. So they're seeing her during the proliferative phase, the secretory phase, and when she's actually having her periods. And they're drawing a blood sample and endometrial biopsies and comparing those to a biobank of tissue from women before COVID even existed in order to see if there are any changes on any of these levels that I was talking about earlier. And even if we don't see any changes, that might actually be reassuring for our patients to know that there aren't any major changes going on. So this was a very interesting talk, and it made me think about several things. The first thing was that this work really addresses the importance of validating our patients' experiences of menstrual-related disturbances. Women often see their periods as an outward reflection of their fertility. And when this COVID vaccine and menstrual disturbances information first came out, I think as physicians, we tried to underplay their concerns or downplay their concerns because we were worried about vaccine hesitancy. But I've learned that we need to be sensitive towards that and incorporate it into our counseling. It may be helpful to our patients that there might be an immunologic cause for the change in their periods, but it's not yet understood. But there has been lots of literature out there that the vaccine or the infection itself shouldn't affect their future fertility. And I think being able to reassure our patients with that information is very helpful. The second takeaway point was what a huge missed learning opportunity this was for women's health in terms of us as advocates for prospective clinical trials and improved vaccine surveillance strategies. In Canada, we have to actually find this form as patients. We have to fill it out. There's actually no part in it that asks about menstrual irregularities. And then we have to mail it in. So it puts the onus hugely on the patient to report these sorts of vaccine-related changes. And we need to think about how this can be better. done in the future. Additionally, we don't take any information on a woman's last menstrual period when she gets vaccinated, and this could also have an effect on how she reacts to the vaccine. The big point that I've been underscoring with my patients is that the effects of COVID-19 and/or vaccination might be transient, but anyone who's having abnormal bleeding, we still need to work that up appropriately. And this is especially important in the terms of women with postmenopausal bleeding. I can't tell you the number of patients that I speak to who are like, oh yeah, well, I had bleeding after menopause, but I just received my vaccine, so it's fine. I really have been emphasizing with them the importance of working this up, because we can't attribute everything to the COVID vaccine. And the last point is, when we think about designing these studies that are looking at the effects of infections or the effects of vaccines, we really need to use standardized terminology. We can't just reinvent the wheel with each study that we do, because it makes it very hard for the clinicians who are coming after us to interpret these studies and draw helpful conclusions for our patients. So all in all, it was a great talk, and I'm really glad I got to share this with you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Shore. Fascinating stuff. A very common experience in the pandemic, a very common patient-reported experience that we don't have a lot of literature for. And at the risk of being on a soapbox, I agree our research needs to be funded, it needs to be validated, and our patients need to be listened to, and it's super important. What have you found as useful talking points for your own patients who come to the office who say either they've experienced a cycle-related change from their COVID vaccine, or they're concerned about the changes in the cycles they've experienced in the pandemic?
Great question. And certainly it's something that's coming up a lot. I think also just the fact that people are home a lot more, or just aware of their health in general, it's becoming, you know, more at the forefront of everyone's minds. So, I mean, the first thing that I tell them is that, yes, you know, there are lots of reports of irregularity related to the vaccine. So I, you know, recognize that. And I think it's great that you're keeping an eye on it. The second point is that I want to find out from them, is this something that happened for one or two cycles, or is this something that's been going on for a longer period of time? Because I think if something is happening for more than one or two cycles, it warrants investigation, whether that's blood work, an ultrasound, an endometrial biopsy, a physical exam, just to look at their cervix and see if there's anything there. So anything that's happening for more than a few cycles, I really encourage them to come in and let's go through the whole, you know, workup. And then, you know, as I mentioned before, postmenopausal women, I don't care if it's vaccine related. Those are the women that I want to biopsy, that I want to have an ultrasound for. And then if everything checks out, then maybe we can say it was related to the vaccine, but not until they've had a thorough workup first.
And other than postmenopausal bleeding, what other red flag symptoms should patients be looking for if they're worried about their periods that should make them think they should see their primary care provider, or that a primary care provider should consider a referral to gynecology?
Great question. So I think any absence of periods for more than 3 months at a time is a big red flag, especially if you've ruled out that they're not pregnant or no problems with their, you know, prolactin or TSH. Any woman who is having severely heavy periods where they're, you know, flooding or soaking several large pads in a day, feeling any symptoms of anemia as a result of the heavy bleeding, or anyone that's having just really irregular bleeding when they're bleeding for more than, you know, a week at a time or several times in between periods, those are all things that make me concerned. And I would, you know, work up, like starting with a ultrasound as a, you know, general practitioner and some blood work checking their hemoglobin, iron, and thyroid are always like a good place to start. Oh, the other thing is, based on their age and body mass index, that might make me more concerned as well. So over 40 or elevated body mass index can be concerning as well.
Great. Hopefully, you know, we take this opportunity to really emphasize to healthcare providers the importance that, that patients place on their own menstrual cycles. We see this a lot as gynecologists, and I agree, you know, it is seen as a vital sign, not only for current health, but future health and future fertility. And so this is really helpful for us. Thank you very much for your time today, Dr. Shore, and for reviewing the literature on this. Hopefully we have more data to show as time progresses and people take advantage of 2022 to put their reproductive health first, get checked out, get their screening up to date, and not suffer with bad periods if that's what they're facing. Thanks so much.
Sure. Thank you. Thanks for having me. It was great. Thank you.